So, Paul, you said that if the ground start, the ground power wasn't available, or maybe if it was a starter that was the problem, so ground power wouldn't even help, you would accept the offer of the mechanic propping the airplane for you. Let me broaden that out a little bit. Do you feel like knowing how to prop an airplane is a valuable skill, maybe even an important skill for people to have? Or is it one of those such a corner case that you should stay away from it and maybe not even accept it unless it's someone who really, really knows what they're doing?
Well, it's kind of an edge case. If I were teaching someone to prop, I wouldn't pick an 0360 on a twin or single to do it, because I mentioned that kind of odd swing that you have to develop in propping. And let's make no mistake about this. Even if you've got the airplane tied down, a foot slip or just being clumsy about it, you could still get injured, and it happens. And there's been a couple of incidents at my airport where it has happened. I'm sure there are many others. So if I were going to teach somebody to prop, I'd probably do it on something small first. And I don't think I want to do it in the heat of battle on an 0360 when there's time pressure. There are better options here. That's the point. I mean, what are we trying to do? We're trying to get the airplane back, and we're trying to do it as safely as we can.
Dave?
No, I've got a fair amount of experience hand-propping airplanes. And what Paul kind of alludes to on this is that that really knowing how to hand-prop an airplane would convince you that hand-propping a Duchess is a bad idea. I mean, an 0360 with a metal prop on a tailwheel airplane, no problem. That can be done. But on a nosewheel airplane, yeah, that strikes me as a really dangerous thing to attempt.
If you were stuck somewhere, Dave, and you had the choice of, you know, walking into town or waiting hours versus hand-propping a nosewheel 0360, single or twin, with all your propping experience, would you wait and walk into town, or you'd be like, you know, I can do this?
Yeah, I'd be extremely reluctant. You know, I mean, it's like you can. I'm sure we can envision some sort of national emergency scenario where you'd give it a shot. It's like that would be a real last resort.
And let me push it one step further. If somebody else was like this mechanic was like, oh, no problem, would you accept it?
You know, it's kind of, I was kind of chuckling to myself about this because this happens in Florida and this scenario takes place in Florida. And I was just remembering back to a ferry flight I did in a clipped wing cub with no electrical system, and that required a dozen stops to get to my destination. But it struck me that it's like, hey, in the South, Southerners are good at hand propping airplanes and they're willing to do it. Yankees are not. It's like same trip in across the North. You know, whenever I ask about hand propping, that people just would back up and, you know, run away. But no, Southerners are great about hand propping. But to your question, no. I mean, it's like if I'm not willing to do it myself, I'm not going to ask anybody else to do it either.
Dean and then Michael. Dean.
Jeff, you were asking about, is this valuable training to learn how to hand prop an airplane? And I think it is valuable training, even if you rarely, if ever, use it. And one of those reasons is that it shows you just how very slowly you can be turning a prop in the direction of rotation. And when you engage the impulse coupling, if the fuel mixture is correct, it's going to snap and just take off. So that is a valuable lesson in itself.
Michael.
There's so many things to think about this, and all of these points are good. I was trained by my dad to hand prop airplanes, and in the flight school business, we did it numerous, I don't know, I've done it over 100 times on 172s and 152s in the day. And there's all kinds of things to think about. Is it carbureted? Is it fuel injected? Is the engine warm? Is it cold? Does it have an impulse coupling, or does it have, you know, a vibrator, a shower of sparks, all of those things. But just like when I put a new airplane in an engine in an airplane that's in our business, I'm the only one to fly it first because the risk is mine. It's my business. It's my airplane. Same thing with hand propping. I would never let somebody else hand prop an airplane. If I'm going to do it, I need it done, I'm going to be the one that's going to do it. And then the other thing is, who's actually sitting at the controls, because that's the most important thing. So my little brother and I were sort of a team when we did it in the wintertime in a flight school. It's cold outside. The batteries are weak. You need to get it running. It's a cold January morning, and that's the only way to get it going. And if you're I'm sure Dean knows the grease gets a little thick in the starter, and the Bendix won't spin out, and then there's no preheater around to do it. So, I mean, we're getting down in the weeds, but I agree with Paul. You'd have to jumpstart it, but there's so many factors that I think today it's just a lost art, hand propping, and I would say absolutely not do it.
Dean.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up and say that even though I think it's valuable training, it's also a subject that needs great caution, because I was at an EAA local picnic last fall and these tail draggers flew in and one guy needed a hand prop. He didn't even have a battery or a electrical system, I guess. And so I was happy to do that for him. And it was on a grass strip. The airplane was on a bit of an incline, which I was totally not expecting. And as I swung the prop and came away from the airplane, when it started, actually, it might have been one of the times it didn't start, but that doesn't matter. I almost toppled over backwards because I had to really scramble to keep myself on my feet. So it can be done, but there are just things that can be out of the ordinary situations. And I do think that it's valuable to learn, but probably best to be avoided whenever possible.
Paul, John.
Question for Dean. You mentioned shower sparks. Am I right in remembering that propping won't work with shower sparks?
Yeah, you know, I was just wondering about that question myself, because earlier I was thinking, okay, unless you have an impulse coupling, you are not going to be hand propping that airplane. And then here just a little while ago, I was wondering about that. You have to have the ignition switch, I believe, in the start position in order to get the shower of sparks. And so to have the potential of a starter running at the same time, yeah, that would not work. I don't think I've ever heard of anyone hand propping an airplane that has a shower of spark system, but I think Dave's about ready to set me straight. So I'm going to learn something here. I like to learn.
Go, Dave.
Oh no, it's exactly as Dean describes, and this is really common on the with the Russian M14 engines. What happens is they'll lose that they have a pneumatic starter. They'll lose air pressure. Then the hand start procedure is somebody pushes the ignition button that activates the shower of sparks. The whoever's hand propping it turns it, and it turns backwards, by the way. But it's just like that impulse coupling that you can barely be moving that prop. And when that lights, it lights all at once right now.
John, did you have something you wanted to say, Stiller?
Yeah, whether hand propping or hooking up the jumper cables to start it, from my knowledge of electronics and aircraft engines, and which is, you know, moderate to say the best, it's almost never a good idea to start with a battery that's flat and charge it with the aircraft alternators. That's just asking to cook the battery. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen halfway through this flight with a battery that's now exhausted and has been jumped. And, you know, you look at the charge rate on this, it's going to be putting 50 amps in each from each alternator. So if you want to kill the battery permanently, jump it and or hand prop it and charge it with the alternators, as opposed to charging it according to the battery manufacturer's schedule with the trickle charger.
Richard, then back to Dean.
Jeff, you know, it seems periodically, like once a year or so, we hear about a tragic accident where, a prop came off unexpectedly, you know, the engine kind of turned over. And so it's just a reinforcement of the points that have been made here. You don't have to put a lot of pressure and a lot of energy on it for the engine to fire off. And the most recent one I'm thinking of is a person whose ignition switch was worn out. So you could take the key out, but the ignition was still hot. And he was down moving a tow bar and hit the prop, and it just fired and killed him. And so, you know, I'm just making a point while we're on this subject to realize how sensitive these propellers are, and it doesn't take much force at all to get them to fire off. And so making sure that our mags are turned off after shutdown. And I was always taught, always treat a prop like it's hot and just, you know, kind of stay away from it.
Dean.
I was just going to mention, too, on these Lycoming engines on the Duchess we're talking about here, if the prop had turned just a little bit, then the Bendix drive would be engaged, and it would need several hundred RPM in order to retract. So that would make it, if that was the case, it would make it even harder to hand prop it for a Lycoming engine.
Oh, because you'd be turning the starter at the same time.
You'd be turning the starter drive in addition to the engine.
Yeah, but you can back it off, can't you, with a screwdriver?
I don't think so.
If you can access it from the front where the ring gear is?
I don't think you can do it with a screwdriver. It'll just click in one direction and grab in the other. I think it has to have several hundred RPM, but I'm not sure about any other way to retract it.
Dave?
Yeah, just a question. Since this is a twin, you still need the battery to start the other engine. And then you could, I was just thinking if you could charge it with one, but
that's true. That's a good point. When you have a twin, yeah, start the one where the Bendix drive is not engaged.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's that. And I was just thinking that, you know, that way you could at least confirm if it was the starter that was the problem and not the battery, but.
Right. And also worth pointing out is that the procedure is to, when you're using external powers with alternators off, so you want to start both engines with the ground power, however you're doing it, disconnect and then bring the alternator.
Right, and I also want to reiterate Paul's point that it's like the ground power receptacle with the alligator clips in a 14-volt electrical system is a thing of beauty. I mean, they've saved me a few times, and I'm on a trip right now where I had a weak battery, and I realized I don't have my alligator clips, and I was feeling awfully foolish.
Feeling exposed on that. Yeah. Well, you know, I want to back up a little bit to this concept about moving a prop just in general and the danger of a prop. You know, it seems like there's the two camps of the prop is always hot, and whatever you do, treat it that way. Versus the, you know, come on, folks, as long as you have a well-maintained ignition system, we move propellers all the time, you know, just to attach a tow bar, or certain flight schools require after a flight, the propellers in one position or another to say, hey, this plane needs refueling or not. You know, where do people stand around the table on, you know, propellers, touching propellers, talking to people about it, and even making sure that the system's working correctly? Paul?
Well, this is probably the value of teaching hand propping is if you stay out of the arc of the prop, no harm will befall you. So if you have to move a prop for a tow bar or during fueling or any other reason, move it from the front without your fingers wrapped around either edge. And if it should happen to fire, if the impulse coupling catches and it does fire, you'll be out of the arc. That's what I always teach. And the other thing is to do frequent P-lead checks, which is while the engine is idling, switch the mags to off. And if the engine doesn't stop, well, then you have an open P-lead.
Dean?
Yeah, I was just going to add that I agree with you, Paul, that it's important to treat that prop like it's going to, it could fire, and also to verify that the ignition switch is off. And then I always like to turn, well, not always, when we do compression testing and mag timing and those things, sometimes we turn the prop in the normal direction of rotation, but out on the ramp and for tow bar purposes and all those things, I like to turn it in the reverse direction of rotation just to not catch the impulse coupling. And sometimes people have said, well, you might break a vacuum pump vane, but I've never seen that happen on any airplane that I've been close to. So I like to turn it backwards.
Right. Although that's for, you know, conventional direct drive props.
That's true.
Dave, like you do a lot of Rotax flying, and they discourage it, I think, with the carburetors, and they forbid it turning the prop backwards with the fuel injected system for some reason.
That's a great point.
It's actually in the manual that like you can't do it. So it does come down to a factor of kind of knowing your systems. And maybe, you know, that's sort of an interesting thing about this scenario is there is underneath this all a deep, you know, value in really knowing the system in the airplane, because we've tossed around words like Bendix drive and the voltage of the system and charging a dead battery or not charging a dead battery. Paul brought up, you know, it's one thing to depart in this airplane in visual conditions, but night IMC when the whole charging system is carrying lights and maybe GPS and, you know, other equipment, especially as we've done more and more on our airplanes. That's definitely a real takeaway here, is that concept. Dean and then Michael.
Yeah, John had a great caution about if the battery is really low, it might be a really bad idea to try to hand prop an airplane, because it's going to be a severe strain on the electrical system. But I was just thinking how the technology these days, you can get one of these fantastic little voltage indicators and slip into the cigarette lighter. And so before you hand prop that airplane, it might be a great idea to just plug that or have your little voltage indicator, note what the voltage is, because I think I would be much more likely to hand prop an airplane that perhaps had maybe 8 or 10 volts or 11 than I would if it had, say, 2 or 3 volts. That might be a really bad idea. So the technology for those simple voltage indicators is a really great tool.
Right, or even just the jump start, right, Dean? Like if it jump it, yes, equivalent to hand prop there in terms of using the alternators to charge the battery versus if it's really low.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. I think that's what I meant to say. Yeah, the jump start. Yeah, yeah, the jump start is what we're talking about.
Michael.
Yeah, I think we've really beat to death that hand propping an airplane is probably not a very good idea. And I just wanted to reiterate what you said. And it's not to talk badly about people that have just learned to fly recently, but if you look at the people that are here talking, they're all a bunch of airport bums, right? And you start by working in the hangar and understanding what a Bendix is and how that works and what an impulse coupling is versus a shower of sparks and all that. It's just so many variables that unless you're really comfortable and knowledgeable in that kind of stuff, it's just really, really a bad idea.
Yeah, and that, as I was saying before, is really the what I'm taking away from this scenario is this, you know, you really do need to know the systems that you have. And what it allows you to do is make a much more informed decision about non-standard procedures that might get you on your way. You know, in this case, the automotive jumper cables to the battery and the back of the airplane, you know, it's just an inconvenience because the alligator clip connector isn't available, right? It really isn't a risk as weird as it seems. Whereas something that, you know, this very experienced mechanic is totally comfortable with has real risk and then has maybe hidden risks about what's going to happen in the airplane as you're charging everything up and even on that flight home, even in day VFR, but over some pretty inhospitable territory.